Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into, 70-degree days, St. Patrick's Day, March Madness. This guy cannot wait for the first crack of the bat at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. That'll be on April the 8th. Don Mohler joins us now. We do not have any special celebrity guests. We're doing this each and every week. We call it the Recon. Happy spring to you. Did you spring ahead? July. I lost an hour over the weekend. How about you?
That's always a little rude awakening, isn't it? But I do like the fact that last night I looked out the window. It was 7:20, and there was still some light on the street. So
that's why I put the orange behind me, Don. I'm giving you extra daylight here is what I'm
doing. There you go. I'll put up with a little dark in the morning if I can have that little extra light at the end of at the end of the day, you know. So it's been another crazy week, you know. As every day there's something going on, but this week, you know, we're coming off the heels recently. We've got Selection Sunday, and people sit around their TVs and see who's in the bracket and who's not in the bracket. And
Duke's not in the bracket. I know that.
Duke's not in the bracket. I'm on a new – I think my new mission's going to be, Nestor, and it's funny, you know, our good friend John Feinstein obviously is always very, very brutal to the committee, and I think he makes a lot of really, really good points. He's a great follow on Twitter if people care about the NCAA. And my new thing, I think, is that the committee has to begin to move away from what I'm going to call these throwaway bids to major conferences. And I'll use Maryland. Listen, you know, I'm a Terp fan. I'm delighted for Terp Nation that they get to play another game. But from where I sit, you know, a Maryland and a Michigan State, the tournament would be better not giving them bids and finding other mid-major teams, teams like UMBC that won their conference and got knocked out before winning the tournament for the automatic bid. I think adding some more mid-majors and taking out what I call these – they're throwaway bids. I mean, Maryland
– it's not a throwaway bid if the conference is getting the money, though.
That's the argument.
The money leads all of this. I mean, that goes without saying, which makes it even more shocking that Duke and Kentucky aren't in the bracket, right?
Right. Well, it's you know, college best. Somebody told me, Nestor – actually, you know, my brother and our pal Dave Thurston, who follow this stuff closely, that there might be as many as a couple thousand kids in the transfer this year, in the transfer portal. I mean, what's really happening, college basketball is a bit at a crisis. The game itself, I don't think, is at the caliber that we got used to over a number of years. It just isn't. It looks different. Kids coming and going, playing for 1 year, the graduate transfers. It's a very different game than the one that we grew up watching, you know.
No, but I don't think it is at UMBC. When I think UMBC is right, playing Vermont or whatever, I think, or Towson, you know, more. I was in a burger shop in Towson the other day, ran into a kid who played for Pat. He was wearing right, his jersey and talked to him about their year. They didn't have a very good year, but, you know, there is a part of all of that. At the level where you were a high school principal, Catonsville, and you had a kid that could go to Bucknell and play, or a kid that could go to Delaware and play, or whatever, that's normal. Everything above that level, to your point where it's big conference, big play, ACC, all these schools moving around, last 25 years, this is what it's been. It's been about 20 or 30 schools where it's an industry, and Maryland's one of those places where they want it to be an industry. It hasn't been as good an industry the last 10 years.
No, and you know, you get into, and our listeners, it's interesting. I think Mark Turgeon generates as much interesting sports talk. We don't do a lot of sports talk.
I don't think it's interesting. I think people firing Turgeon, I don't think it's interesting, by the way. When I see it in here,
what do you mean by that?
I just don't think that dude's been getting fired every day for 7.5 right, or 8 years, and here they are in the tournament again. I don't know what miracles you want him to work. Do I think he's a great coach? You know, I mean, I don't think he's you know, Krzyzewski, but I don't think he's not capable. I don't think that they're not capable of winning. I just think it's very difficult to win. I think the level of expectation that I've heard Maryland fans cry about from the days of Cole Fieldhouse, that every year they're supposed to win, every year they go to, It doesn't even work that way in Duke and Kentucky right now. It doesn't work that way at UConn anymore.
Not anymore.
Or in Syracuse, or in Georgetown, or any of these places where they won, but they don't win every year.
Well, I think it's fair. I think it's fair, though, Nestor, for people to raise a question about whether or not with what you see in Coach Turgeon, Mark Turgeon, is what you get. And I think you've described it. I think they're always, because of his coaching ability, and I don't think people should lose sight of that, they're always going to be pretty good. I don't think Turgeon's ever going to have a team that truly stinks in the conference. He's going to find a way to get them to be pretty good. Do I think it's a fair discussion as to whether or not Mark Turgeon is the type of coach that can get his team to make a deep run in March? I think that's fair because I'm not sure I'm there. I'm not sure that I see him having the type of coaching pedigree that'll make a deep run. The other thing that I think gets lost, and then we'll move on to some other things in current events and politics and things happening in the world and vaccine. The other thing that I think doesn't get enough discussion around Mark Turgeon, I actually think people get it wrong, is people will often say, well, yeah, he's a good recruiter, but I don't think his game coach knows it. I would suggest that he's not a great recruiter. And I would suggest that if you go around the NBA and try to find outstanding Terps who are making the All-Star team who played for Mark Turgeon, you're not going to find any. And take the young man who I'm very fond of from Mount St. Joe, my alma mater, Sticks, who ended up, he's in the minor leagues now of the NBA. He wasn't to say Bruno Fernandez. The best they probably have is Kevin Herter, and he's a role player. So it's not like Mark Turgeon brings in one NBA star after another NBA star. And I think this current team, for example,
if you have an NBA star, you only keep him for 3 months.
But you at least get a year or two out of them. And this year, you know, I think it's the remarkable.
You're an NBA star, you don't get 2 years. You get one.
You probably get one, correct. And then hopefully it pans out.
Steve Francis might quit in the middle of a tournament game.
The kid gets rich, and hopefully it pans out for the team. But we tried to play.
I don't know how that worked with Diamond Stone and Suleiman. That was the best team he had. The best team he had was that kind of team, and it wasn't very good.
No, it was not very good. So it's and people forget. Listen, Gary had incredible runs, won a national championship, but people forget by the end, Gary was cooked as well. I think the AAU system, the whole way you have to recruit nowadays, your former buddy, a former player, Beno Ransom, and that whole thing, the way you have to function anymore, I think really takes a toll on these guys. I think you see it a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if Coach K's nearing the end of his run, right? I mean, it's
got to be nearing the end of it. I saw Boeheim on the court over the weekend. I'm like, right. What the hell? I can't.
Right, he's right. Still, it's not fun. I don't think it's fun for these guys anymore in the current atmosphere. But anyway, you know, March
Madness. It's less fun with no fans, too. I mean, it's been a trying. You talk about mental health, and I know your sister gave a TED Talk recently, and, you know, the mental health of being a college athlete or basketball player or coach. You know, this has been kind of a tough year, and the fact that there is a tournament when it was all taken away from that industry last year, this is kind of a monumental week. I mean, you got your shot. Your wife's got her shot. My wife has her shot. Spring is sprung. I sense some real optimism in this country in a way that with the other guy out golfing 3 days a week for 4 years and lying to people and bullying people and running a presidency on a social media platform, it's been a little different when you're getting 3 and 4 million people a day getting shots in their arm. You know, I'm not looking forward to my shot because I don't like shots. I'm a wimp. But I feel like it's coming soon. I mean, I am going to have a shot by the end of May, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I think, Nestor, and that's a great pivot to some of the things that are happening in the nation. I am still befuddled. Some will say I'm often befuddled, but I am truly befuddled by the latest stat that 47% of Republican voters will refuse to get the vaccine. The fact that we have turned getting a vaccine into a political statement just continues to perplex me. I don't get it.
Science, Don. It's about beliefs. It's about who you trust with information and what you believe is a fact, right? I mean, I guess it's George Costanza, right? If you believe it's true, it is, right?
Well, I saw one of the analyses, and it's of the, there's so many things that have been harmful, obviously, during the former guy's run, during the celebrity host run. But the fact that he sort of leads his band in one direction and then is unwilling when they embrace whatever he's selling as the medicine man, you know, Professor Harold Hill in the Music Man, whatever he's selling, the fact that he's unable to try to then take them in a different direction is pretty disheartening. For example, for he and Melania to get the shots in secret at the White House so no one knows, because he's afraid that some of his followers who are anti-vaxxers and anti-science people will think less of him, is really pretty disturbing. The fact that he would not participate in a public service announcement with every former living president is disturbing, because
I said that for 4 years. He's mentally ill.
And
the people that follow him and follow this ideology, I just feel sorry for them. I don't know what else to say. You're not dealing in reality.
But it has potential.
You're absolutely live in, and this country shouldn't live in.
Well, you're right, Nestor. But the problem is that it really does have public health implications for the rest of the nation. You know, if 47% of the Republican people, someone said recently, before long, you said you're going to get your shot. Before long, we're going to move from a supply issue to a demand issue. Before long, we're going to have vaccines sitting there waiting for people to get shots.
Well, I'm going to move quicker to the front of the line because these idiots don't want their shot. Great. Give it to me. I'll get mine April 10th instead of April 20th. How about that?
Without a doubt, you're going to move to the front of the line.
Well, this is where, you know, we talk about, you know, the fundamental state of humanity and, you know, those of us who make good decisions get to survive. And those of us who decide against vaccinations in the middle of a plague perish, literally, right? I mean, that's how this works, right?
Oh, no doubt. And I think the whole, what do you know, get in line, peer pressure kind of thing, I think we saw it in the state. I mean, I think by every measure, I think Governor Hogan's handling, and again, we continue to invite Governor Hogan and his folks. Kiefer, if you're listening, I know you listen. We'd love to sit down and chat with the governor. Mike Ricci, we'd love to sit down and chat with the governor. I think the governor's performance has been uneven at best, certainly in terms of managing vaccine distribution. But then to suddenly just come out and announce that all restrictions are coming off in terms of capacity in restaurants and public venues seems a bit premature. To do it again without any notification to county executives and mayors, I don't think that's the best side of the governor. And he's done many things well, but there's been an awful lot about this vaccine rollout that's been really, really uneven here in the state of Maryland.
Well, I don't know where the rules would be in places where the Florida guy's selling off the vaccines to enclaves of donors and whatnot. The fact that that has happened, and the fact that, quite frankly, there's $1.9 trillion of money floating around. Last time Tom Brady's getting PPPs and whatnot, right? Like, there's a cash grab going on when there's this much money, from your Democratic, left side soul. All this money is getting funneled out now. There's going to be all sorts of chicanery going on about how to get it, right?
Vaccine. Yeah, I mean, I think we worried about that in the beginning. I go back now that I think that the Biden administration, just recently, we had a recent day, right, where there was 3 million shots into an arm. So it appears to me that the Biden administration has the distribution under control. And, you know, we're going to have to now turn to a public service. What we really need are some conservative icons. And there really is, unfortunately, again, there's one big dog, right? And that big dog's at Mar-a-Lago, because even the Ted Cruz's, you know, Cancun Ted and others, they don't have the kind of juice that the former celebrity host has. So we really need the big dog to come out and say to his folks, hey, we need to do this. And you know what?
Come on, Don. If you've made up your mind and you're wearing a red hat and you're, you know, Caucasian on a farm in America and you've just decided this vaccine thing's not for you.
Okay, but you want to hear?
You're not changing those people.
Well, here's how it changes. And this is how crazy my brain works from time to time.
Any more than you were going to get them to vote for Biden or Hillary Clinton or an African-American male or female or a woman or, you know, I mean, I've met these people. I know these people.
Right,
they're not changing their mind.
Oh, well, yes.
You're related to some of them. You can't change their mind.
I am. And, you know, I love them dearly. Here's how they would change their mind. If the celebrity host were to come out and create a new conspiracy theory.
If the cult god, you mean?
If the cult god came out of the clubhouse at Mar-a-Lago and said, here's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make sure we don't get the vaccine. They're trying to make sure that we're get sick and we won't be able to vote in upcoming elections. So I need all my MAGA followers to get on. They would do it tomorrow because for whatever reason, they do whatever he said. So it's really because there is a way for him to save face and get millions of his people vaccinated, because if he were to take that approach, they would run immediately to their computers and sign up, because they would say, cult leader said that it's a plot to keep us from getting vaccinated. We have to get back. They would shift immediately. That would be, even though it would be insane and it wouldn't be true.
Well, he's so dangerous, they don't let him on social media anymore, Don.
Right. Well, and it
that's
just,
how dangerous he is.
Well, and then you've got his followers saying things out loud. I mean, you know, it didn't get nearly the coverage it should have, Nestor. But Senator Ron Johnson comes out and says, and I'm paraphrasing, but not by much, folks. Go look at the direct quote over the past week or so by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. Basically says, I really wasn't worried on January 6th. Because those people charging a building and breaking it, they were white. I really wasn't worried about them. Now, had they been black or supporters of black, then I'd have been scared as you know what. Now, I mean, he said it out loud. He said it out loud at a time when 43 states, and I think we're up now, I saw it's well over 200 bills across the country to keep people from voting. I mean, there is some ugly, ugly stuff taking place out there. And they're beginning to say it out loud. You know, they spend all their time talking about a made-up crisis with Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss, none of which, if people pay attention, is true. You know, take the Seuss thing. Oh, they're banning Dr. Seuss. You're never going to read The Cat in the Hat. Well, no, none of that was true. The family looked at six out of, you know, many, many, many books and said, you know, there's some images in these books that are pretty offensive by today's standards, and we shouldn't publish those books anymore. You know, I saw someone say, well, how about if they redid the illustrations? Well, I think then you would revisit it. But it wasn't groupthink that said, take these books down, you can't sell, and we're never going to read The Cat in the Hat. No, that wasn't true, but that doesn't make a great story. Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, they're not going to be called Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head anymore. Hasbro had to come out and issue a statement and said, yes, they are. We're just calling the entire brand Potato Head, but within the brand, they're still going to be Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head. But when you're bereft of ideas, and this is what I say to my Republican friends and colleagues, come back with ideas.
That makes sense to me.
Let's start
that
having
makes
a
sense to me. I'm 52 years old.
Right.
I'm sort of Latin. I'm sort of white. I'm certainly not African-American. I grew up in East Baltimore. I've mingled with people all over the world, all over. I've been involved in politics. Sell me something that makes sense to me.
Right.
Make me come on the radio and say, that's a good idea, Andy Harris. That's leadership. That's something that I can fully get behind. That's a great idea. Those ideas do not exist on that side of the aisle.
And the ideas
on that side of the aisle are unintelligent, lacking science, leading with a gun, leading with racial division. That makes it uninhabitable for
me. And voter suppression. No, you're right, Nestor. And that's why I say to my Republican friends who get angry and say, oh, you're calling us all racist. I always say, no, I'm not. This is a really, really important point. No, I'm not. And I need all of those Republicans who think that to listen carefully again. What I'm saying is that Ron Johnson, not Don Mohler, not Nestor, saying what Ron Johnson said. Ron Johnson said, I wasn't afraid because these crazy people who killed one police officer, caused a couple others to die, sent people to the hospital, and were going to hang Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi. I really wasn't afraid because they were white, but had they been black, then I'd have been scared. Ron Johnson said that. Now, he's a Republican. He's a leader of your party. In 43 states, they are trying to pass laws to keep people from voting. In Georgia alone, they're shortening the number of early vote dates, making no early voting on weekends, so that the whole African-American church tradition of souls to the polls will go away. And they're eliminating drop boxes, and they're shortening the window to vote on election day. Now, all of those are targeted toward African-American voters. What I say to my Republican friends is simple.
That's un-American.
Are you comfortable?
Or maybe it's too American.
Are you comfortable being part of a party that stands for those things? Now, there's not a personal attack, as I said on social media recently.
Well, nobody signed up for that party during Ronald Reagan's administration believing they were buying Newt Gingrich's philosophy for the next 30 years.
Now, it started, although Reagan,
Fox News believe Tucker Carlson is an honest human being, which once you've made that move, that Rush Limbaugh led a good life and was a good man and was always telling it like it was, once you've made that move, I have found it to be, over the last 20 years of my life, impossible to have a cogent conversation because you're dealing with facts that aren't facts. People believe things that are not true. And I haven't seen a whole lot of people quit the Republican Party around me. Now, I know there's some Rick Wilsons and some Joe Walsh. You know, I follow people, right? Like, I see that there is such a thing. Michael Steele, who apparently is going to run for governor here, right? So that's a local issue, someone we've had on the show. But by and large, in the strongholds of Middle River and Harford County and in the surrounding counties, people with red flags are voting red, and that 75 million would tell you that there's nothing I'm going to say that there's nothing Barry Glassman's going to say in Harford County that is going to keep them from voting for him, no matter what. I mean, that's where it is. That's the partisanship of the country right now, not on any one politician or any. It's just the way the country is right now. It's that divisiveness. And it really does go for me to facts and more than that race. I don't vote with Nazis. Does anybody ask me who I voted for? Not the ones that the Nazis were voting for. I voted the other side.
Right. No. I think that's the really, really hard discussion. And I continue, and this is where I do think, and I've written about it recently. I hope folks will jump out to DonMohler.com and visit the front porch. I've written that I think that Joe Biden may indeed be the perfect president for our time, in that his demeanor and his affect does appear at this point to be able to be turning down the temperature. I mean, the attacks are picking up, but his approval ratings are still remarkably consistent in the mid-50s, some as high as 60. The approval for the American Recovery Plan is still above 70%. So he appears to be resonating with people who just said, man, I just need a little bit of normal in my life. And Nestor, speaking of normal, as we sort of wrap up our weekly look and weekly weekend review, so to speak, I want to tell you just a little two plugs, really, for Baltimore Positive. One is a guest we've had on recently, now posted, I believe, Rob Gould, from former vice president at BG&E and vice president of Florida Power and Light. Boy, I thought that he took you and I to school on energy regulation in Texas in a way that people who really wonder what in the heck happened down there, I think they really want to give that a listen. Rob,
I learned a lot in that conversation. I mean, that's why we, for anybody riding around wondering why Don and I talk about politics and local, I learned a lot. I mean, there's plenty to learn, I think, as we've all learned in the last couple of years, right?
Well, no doubt about it. And the other, we're going to be interviewing in a few days, we're going to be interviewing Baltimore Sun reporter Justin Fenton on his new book, We Own This City, which has now been commissioned by HBO to become a new miniseries. I will tell you, Nestor, if folks are listening out there, go to your bookstore, jump on Amazon, wherever you get, and buy this book. It is, you cannot put it down. You and I know a fair amount about the Gun Trace Task Force because, you know, we've interviewed Brandon Soderberg and others who've written on this topic. We've tried to follow it. We've interviewed elected officials and police commissioners on this topic. We've interviewed union leaders on this topic. Fenton's book takes it to another level, and you are going to love that interview. It literally cannot put the book.
I've had a dozen people on my timeline, not you, by the way, talking about that book and how good it is. So
I told my wife, I said to Linda, as soon as I'm done, I'll hand it across to you because it's going to be an unbelievable miniseries. And you know, as funny as I said, we know a little bit about the Gun Trace Task Force. I didn't realize that Wayne Jenkins, Sergeant Wayne Jenkins, who you and I know was sort of the ringleader, the Tony Soprano of this outfit. He was an Eastern Tech student. I had no idea that he grew up in Middle River, went to Eastern Tech. We'll be talking about all that. And then I told you, I prodded you over the weekend. During my workout, I was listening to a podcast. I was listening to Willie Geist interview Guy Fieri. And I said to myself, oh, my God, Fieri is Nestor.
Well, I know Fieri's story. He had like a snowball stand, right, with his family. Is that right?
He started pretzels.
Pretzels.
He started at 10 years old selling pretzels. And the guy where he was his dad gave him money. Dad gave him money for lunch. At that time, as Fieri points out, you sent your kid off to the slopes. You didn't worry, but you didn't helicopter parent them. They came back at the end of the day after skiing all day. And his dad said, what'd you have for lunch? I had soft pretzels. I'd never seen a soft pretzel. Oh, he was from the West. He didn't know there was such a thing as a soft pretzel. So it was a soft pretzel. Well, what else did you have? Soft pretzels. Well, I gave you $5 for lunch. What did you eat? I ate nothing but soft pretzels.
I used to do that at the skate rink.
Soft pretzels. So his dad says, go back to the guy. Why don't, you know, you're 10 years old. Why don't you go back to the guy and ask him where he gets his pretzels, and you set up a little pretzel stand. So Fieri goes back. Guy was real nice, but the guy wouldn't tell him where he got his pretzels. He says, oh, no, what? I'm going to tell you so you can go out and open a business. And Fieri says to the guy, dude, I'm 10 years old. I don't even live here. I'm not going to compete. I just want to know where you get your pretzels. So he wouldn't tell him. So his dad says, I got an idea. Go back later. And when he throws out the box that the pretzels come in, go get the box. So, I mean, this is so you. Fieri sneaks back, takes the box out of the guy's dumpster, finds the address for the company at 10 years old, writes the company, and then from 10 years old until he's 15 or 16, sells pretzels out of a little cart that his dad made at all the fairs and all the events around town, makes enough money that he saves up money
to get a girl, to get a teenager.
He decides he wants to go to France to school to learn about another culture. He has enough money to pay his way. Fietti is you. You were Fietti. Willie Geist, Sunday Today. So when you're done listening to Baltimore Positive, go listen to a little Guy Fietti who channels his inner Nestor.
Well, you and I can channel our inner crab cake here as we get going in the summer. We're going to have a crab cake at Fadley's and Acosta's to start a little crab cake tour later on in the month. Don Mohler here, former Baltimore County executive, my partner in crime on the recon as we're reconning here this week, where we mix a little sports, a little politics, a little current events, and hopefully some springtime, right? Like, what are Let's you looking forward to for spring? What's the thing you're going to do this spring that you have on your horizon? What's on calendar that's circled?
Come on, dude. Come on. What do you think I'm looking forward to? I'm looking forward to a Boog's sandwich and seeing if I can get a game where the Orioles actually get five or six hits. I think it's
you may have to attend a weekend series to get the six hits.
Woo, man. I'm telling you, I've been following them. And, you know, I think the pitching will be okay. Although poor Hunter Harvey, that poor guy, he is a tin man. I feel bad for him, everything he's been through, but he just can't seem to stay on the field. But I know it's only spring training, but my goodness, base hits have been hard to come by. But to answer your question, I will be so happy to be out there one day in a pair of shorts and flip-flops and my Oriole hat and my Oriole shirt, sitting with a big Boogs and an ice-cold Natty Bow. Then I'll know life is really back to normal.
Okay, Don, and that's 161 more after the first one. That's April 1st. The opener is in Boston on a Thursday. The home opener against Boston is here at Camden Yards. Not on that side of the harbor, on the other side of the harbor behind us. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. You can find the recon, our chat with Rob Gould, our coming chat with Justin Fenton, and all of our sports coverage and other sort of little gems that I'm putting together here over the next couple of weeks, including some best of with Brooks Robinson and Mike Messina and Orioles Hall of Famers, including the last ever conversation with Earl Weaver. We'll be getting all of that up in advance of opening day, and it's because there's not really a whole lot to talk about. They're not going to be very competitive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, reconning and never stop talking Baltimore Positive.